Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Speaking of Green. I am your hostess, Beth Bond, also curator of Sustainable News at Southeast Green. We're going to have our first conversation about wind energy power this morning with the good folks over from the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. But before we start, we've got a quick message from our sponsor.
Panna Solar is the largest solar integrator in Georgia and one of the largest in the Southeast, with installation on schools, farms, churches, data centers, and a variety of commercial and residential projects. Panna Solar will provide the best solar system for your varied needs. If you have a solar project in the Southeast, then Panna Solar is your partner for completing the job. Visit Panna Solar at www.pannasolar.com for more information.
This morning we're going to be interviewing Allie Brown and Simon Mahan, so let me just give you a little background information. Allie is a renewable energy associate and is based in Atlanta and works on promoting clean energy, focusing on wind energy throughout the region. She provides assistance on wind energy through research, engagement with diverse stakeholders, policy advocacy, and implementation of local wind activities. Before joining SACE, Allie served on the executive board for Sierra Student Coalition, UGA Beyond Coal, and was a student fellow for Georgia Youth for Environmental Solutions. In addition to environmental organizing, she has engaged in campus sustainability research, and in 2012 she received a grant from UGA's Office of Sustainability to design and oversee student-based research that recommended actions to reduce UGA's energy consumption and increase use of renewable energy on campus by 2020. Allie attended the University of Georgia and received her Bachelor of Arts in Anthropology and minor in Ecology in May 2013. Simon Mahan is a Renewable Energy Manager for SACE, and he joined the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy in September 2010. He is responsible for overseeing the organization's promotion of clean energy with a focus on onshore wind energy within the region, offshore wind, and wind energy transmission. Simon specializes in policy advocacy, energy analysis, and stakeholder engagement. Previously, he worked as an advocate and an analyst for an ocean conservation organization in Washington, D.C., addressing offshore wind economics, industrial energy efficiency, and mercury reduction policies. He earned a B.S. in political science at Missouri State University with minors in biology and communications. Welcome, Allie and Simon.
Thanks
for having us.
So, Simon, I'll just say really quickly, we have a lot in common. I have a poli sci degree and a communications minor also.
Great.
we parted ways when I did history as my second minor, and you did something more difficult.
Well, thanks. Biology is a type of history.
That's true. That is very true. I never thought of it that way, but it's very true. Well, let's go on and start the conversation. Allie, I think this is sort of an interesting thing, although I have this dream, right, of going out to the Midwest, out into the Plain States, and seeing wind turbine fields. Am I the crazy one? Are people really interested in seeing this, and have they become sort of a tourist destination?
Yeah, I mean, no, you're really not crazy, and Simon and I felt that way too, so it was something we really wanted to look into more, look at some case studies to see if it's something that people would really be attracted to. So we've been calling it turbine tourism. So, you know, first of all, just to see how popular wind energy is, there's a recent Navigant study that found that over 70% of Americans have favorable views towards wind energy, so I think that's a good thing to address first when looking to see if people would actually go and pay to tour them and visit them. So we've looked at case studies nationally and across our region that have proven that they can really offer economic and educational opportunities to, you know, surrounding communities. So there's a little bit of anecdotal evidence already. Atlantic Station has 5 large-scale turbines at a wastewater treatment plant. We joke that some people think that, you know, folks wouldn't want to go to a wastewater treatment plant. But, you know, it's shown that 15,000 people go to tour these turbines each year. And then in California, there's a wind farm. What'd you say?
No, go on.
Oh, so in California, there's a wind farm in Palm Springs, and people pay $35 to go tour those. So that's, you know, more nationally, but we're already seeing some evidence here in the Southeast. We only currently have one large-scale wind farm in the Southeast. It's called Buffalo Mountain. But when they paved the roads in order to transport the wind turbines up the mountain, they created a park called Wind Rock Park. So it's a campground with trails relatively close to the turbines. You know, they charge $17 per car to enter the park and have noticed a lot of economic benefits from this. And then additionally, kind of on a smaller scale in our region, we've seen benefits. Fort Lauderdale Hilton Hotel recently installed 6 small-scale rooftop wind turbines. And then North Myrtle Beach has a few small-scale turbines. And then one of our most interesting locations that we love to talk about, there's a brewery in North Carolina, in Outer Banks, North Carolina. It's called Outer Banks Brewing Station, and they have a small-scale turbine, making it the first wind-powered brewery in the U.S. So that really provides a unique attraction. So that's something that we like to highlight. We feel like there really is a lot of potential for economic, educational benefits for the community, and that people are actually willing to pay to go visit these turbines.
Well, I just have 2 words for this. This is road trip.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. We've been thinking about going to Buffalo Mountain soon to go see those turbines, so maybe you want to come with us.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, where is Buffalo Mountain?
It's in Tennessee. So it's not too far of a drive from here in Atlanta. So they have about 15 turbines, and they're up and running and spinning, and we can get pretty close.
Wow, please tap me when y'all decide to go up and do that. That would be so much fun. And then, of course, we'll have to travel across state to the brewery just to make sure, you know, that wind beer
okay.
is good. So. Well, that's really interesting, and that's fascinating. I would love to go to Buffalo Mountain. So, Simon, let's talk a little bit about development of wind farms in the South. Are they really are non-existent, except, I guess, this Buffalo. How are there any more getting proposed? I actually have this dream that there will be a wind farm off of the south of Dauphin Island instead of, there's 15 oil rigs out off of Dauphin Island right now in Alabama where I'm from. And
mm-hmm.
I would really rather see a wind farm than 15 oil rigs. So are there? Are,
sure.
What's going on with proposals?
Sure. Well, what we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years is wind turbine technology has advanced substantially. And what I mean by that is that turbines have gotten taller. The taller you go, the higher you go up into the air, the better wind speeds you can capture. And then also the blades for each turbine has 3 blades. The blades are now longer, which means that they can capture more energy out of the air as well. Both of those things put together, plus some advanced technological advancements in the gearbox and electronics control and composites development, all of these things put together really mean that wind energy can now be economically developed in the South. And we've started seeing this because in an 11-state region down here where we haven't historically seen an awful lot of development, as you mentioned, the Buffalo Mountain project is the only one up and running. In the 11-state region that we kind of represent, we are now seeing in each state wind farms getting proposed, or at least wind developers coming into the states and doing a bit of prospecting. So the new turbine technology opens the floodgates to this type of economic development that we haven't seen before, where we can use our in-state energy resources as opposed to importing them from other states.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question about sort of the – because one of the things that was really interesting that you we talked about in the opening was that 70% of Americans support wind energy.
That's right.
And, you know, and everyone knows I'm a solar geek, so, of course, we're not going to have a conversation without mentioning solar. But the numbers for solar is much higher. It's like 80-85%. Simon, why do you think – the American love for solar is 15% higher than the American love for wind?
Well, so the Navigant study that Ali was talking about showing 70% of Americans support more wind energy, the other side of that was that only about 3% of Americans strongly oppose more wind energy. So there's a huge gap in here of folks that really don't have an opinion either way. And as a matter, it may be that particularly for our region where a lot of folks haven't engaged or haven't seen a wind farm up close and personally, they really haven't had the opportunity to think about it all that much. We have seen other polls and other studies that show, particularly in Kansas, where they do have an awful lot of wind farms, that when you do have more wind farms, people become more supportive of them. So it's kind of this bandwagon effect where you see more of them, realize that they can be good for your community and good for the environment, and so support tends to bump up.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. So my next question, before we get into politics, because the politics are going to take up a good part of the discussion, but Allie, when I hear wind, there's always someone who's like, the birds, and of course, you know, everyone being conscious about the environment, what about the birds? I mean, is this really an issue, or is it less of an issue than people think? Excuse me, my voice is going out.
Right. So I think the first thing that we like to address is we like to use electricity, and electricity is inevitable. So what are the choices that we have, and how do they impact birds and wildlife? So I think that most people would agree that wind energy is one of the most environmentally sound forms of electricity compared to coal and natural gas and other sources of electricity. So wind energy, first of all, you know, there's no fuel that you need to extract. It's inexhaustible. The fuel is free. And one thing that we, you know, there's no carbon emissions. And one thing that we really like to stress is you don't need to use any water to run turbines. And, you know, we found other power plants are very water intensive, which is something that we think about a lot here in the South. So that's something that I like to talk about first when we go into the bird impact. And then the other factor is that, you know, birds just don't have So when we look at birds, we like to think about where their impact is. And I think proper siting is extremely important, first of all. We saw some of the first turbines that were built out in California were built right in the path of, you know, bird migration, and that really impacted them. So proper siting has been a really important factor. And then the other factor is to look at the percentage of birds that are impacted from human-caused created, you know, forms of towers. So we have communication towers, we have buildings, we have cats, we have cats and cars, which are all impacted by birds much more heavily than wind turbines. So I think looking at the percentage, I think you know, it's only 0.001% of bird fatalities happen from wind turbines compared to other human-made structures. So I think looking at that reality is also important as well.
Right. Well, and I guess in my mind also is if people are really concerned about birds, they need to keep their cats indoors because cats, people do not realize how much cats have affected not only birds but squirrel populations. So we just need to be educated and have a realistic viewing of it. I know this, and this is very disturbing, but I know the guy whose job is to drive around an airport in an unnamed southern city, and his job all day is to shoot down birds so it doesn't mess with planes. So,
right.
You know, I'm a,
yeah, I think
knowing
it's
that story.
Yeah, I think it's just important to look at the options that we have for electricity. I think, you know, everybody wants to live in a modern age where we have electricity, and we have to look at our options. You know, the whole reason that I got involved in working on wind energy had to do with conservation. I studied abroad in Costa Rica and studied birds for the majority of my trip and wanted to think about a way that we could help, you know, save birds through impacts of climate change and environmental concerns. And I felt that wind energy was really one of the biggest, you know, that clean energy is one of the biggest solutions to helping save a lot of our species. So I think that's an important thing to look at. Technology is improving. They're, you know, continuously doing studies to look at ways to help, you know, with bird impact, whether it's lighting, you know, the cut-in, cut-out speed of rotors, whether, you know, that impacts birds. But, you know, it's something that we're always looking into and continuing to follow.
Awesome. So let's switch to the political side of this conversation, because as we know, you cannot talk electricity and not talk about politics. So there's been a lot of actually really progressive thinking in regards to wind energy in the Southeast. We've got I'll never forget the day that that press release came from Alabama Power.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, very large. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know, was just really stunning, exciting news. And, of course, Georgia Power has just announced a large wind purchase, and TVA is buying wind. The challenge, mm-hmm. of course, is they're all buying wind outside the region. So mm-hmm. how do we get more wind that they can purchase here in the region, Allie?
Sure. Well, actually, Beth, if you don't mind, I'll try to cover this. So the purchase agreements that you referenced, Alabama Power and Georgia Power and Tennessee Valley Authority, and there's also another one over here in Louisiana with Southwestern Electric Power Company, where they are buying electricity from wind farms in Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas, and TVA has some projects in Illinois and Iowa and some of those other northern states. And what we've seen is that the price points for these projects is phenomenal. So ratepayers are going to get a better deal by buying wind energy from these kind of interior region states than what they can get right now from wind development within our own states. There are some limiting factors to this. One of them is the way the transmission system is built. So if you kind of think of electricity lines as kind of a giant puzzle, and with each puzzle piece, you have to jump to a different grid system. And with each one of those jumps, you have additional charges, additional fees and costs associated. So it becomes more difficult to move a lot of power cheaply across these different balkanized grid systems. And there are some real limitations to how much those transmission lines can continue to hold. So if we are to get a significant amount of additional wind energy for our states, there are a couple of different ways that you can do it. One is through this new concept of developing very long distance, high voltage, direct current transmission lines that directly connect very high wind speed areas out in the panhandle of Oklahoma directly into our region. And that can definitely help bring an awful lot of very, very low, cheap wind energy into the South. Another is, as I mentioned before, the better turbines that we have now. We do have a lot of wind developers in the region, and especially here recently in Alabama, where people are looking to build wind farms in our states. So it's just a matter of time, I'd say, before we start seeing more wind farms get developed in our states, and it's just a matter of technological innovation, and we are seeing that. So it's not a possibility, it's just a matter of when.
So, Allie, do you think, because I know there's a wind docket in Georgia right now being heard, and the docket is really about purchasing, you know, external from the Southeast into the market. Do you think that is really the way to go, or should we be encouraging more wind on the ground here in Georgia and other southern states?
You know, I think it's coming from a multiple areas. I think what we're going to see from wind energy in the South, it's not going to just be one thing. It's going to be transporting wind from the Midwest, just like you mentioned. So that's one factor. Then there's, you know, building along the coast. There's, you know, now that Simon has mentioned that there's better turbine technology, we can construct wind farms, land-based wind farms, and then there's offshore wind, which is much further off, but really, really exciting potential. But yeah, like you mentioned, Georgia Power is working on purchasing 250 megawatts of wind energy from Oklahoma. That's really exciting. It's going to power more than 50,000 homes. I think it's going to come into effect at the beginning of 2016. But the Public Service Commission is currently reviewing the power purchase agreement. But, you know, as Simon said, the reason that this, you know, agreement was made was that Southern Company, Georgia Power, saw that this was a really, you know, low-cost electricity. So it's really exciting. I think that we're going to see, hopefully, in the future, more transmission purchasing of wind energy from outside Georgia. But at the same time, we'll hope to see, you know, more wind energy within our states and regions.
Now, I think the wind energy docket is very interesting because we've had, and I do want to clarify that when we're talking about wind energy and solar, especially in regards to southern states, it's still from an overall percentage minuscule compared to what's being generated by more traditional types of energy. But there's been really, really big movement in regards to at least, you know, consideration and, you know, the upping of the amount has been very progressive. But the wind docket I thought was particularly interesting because we've been so progressive in Georgia on the solar side. And you know, I think that generally people think, you know, where we have overcome the argument that solar does not work in the South, which was always a little interesting anyway, that wind, the fact that we're talking about wind in Georgia, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening in Georgia with wind. And let's talk a little bit about the manufacturing side, because we've got manufacturing. There are wind jobs created in Georgia every day that we don't even know about without us having any real, you know, wind farm or anything like that.
That's something that we love to highlight, and I think a lot of people don't recognize it. You know, even though we only have one large-scale wind farm in our region, there's a huge manufacturing component and supply chain factor that, you know, occurs in our region. So, you know, for example, I always love to talk about Georgia, but we have over 20 wind energy component manufacturing facilities. And there's also the Port of Savannah, which is, you know, a transportation hub for wind energy equipment. So that's something to highlight. It's something that people don't necessarily recognize. And I actually recently had the opportunity to go on a Georgia wind energy tour. It was hosted by Commissioner Tim Eccles and organized by the Georgia Sierra Club, Green Law, and American Wind Energy Association. So this was really awesome. We got to hear from 3 different wind energy companies in Georgia that really highlighted the jobs that are created, what they're working on. There's so many components that go into a wind turbine that people don't even think of. One of the companies is working on, you know, safety equipment and towers that are within the turbine. And then we also had a chance to tour ZF Wind Power, which is a global wind company, and they have a factory in Gainesville, Georgia. So we actually got to go inside the manufacturing facility and see the gearboxes. So they manufacture the gearboxes that go inside the turbine. So that was really incredible. You know, it was a great opportunity for stakeholders, allies, everyone that was there to see the connection that even though we don't have too many wind farms yet, there are a lot of jobs created, and that with more wind energy in our region, we can increase the jobs. I think according to the American Wind Energy Association, there's about 500 to 1,000 jobs in Georgia. But, you know, just think about how many more there could be. And the one other factor that we thought was interesting on the tour was to highlight there's a production tax credit, which is a federal incentive for wind energy, and that recently expired in Congress. So at the ZF Wind Power facility, they were able to actually share how jobs have been impacted due to the fact that we did not extend that tax credit and how that's, you know, hurting the industry. So, you know, it's all holistic. It impacts our state as much as it does any other state that has wind energy. So,
great. So we're out of time, unfortunately, because I would really like to ask a couple more questions, but I want to be respectful of y'all's time. And I just want to make sure that everyone gets contact information from both of you. So just give whatever information you're comfortable with. And if anybody has more questions or would like to, maybe we'll do a big tour up to Buffalo Rock, Allie. And Simon, if you want to give your information first, please.
Yeah, sure. So folks can email me at simon@cleanenergy.org or follow me on Twitter at Simon Mahan. That's M-A-H-A-N.
And yeah, Allie? And I'm Allie, A-L-L-I-E, at cleanenergy.org, and my Twitter handle is Allie H. Brown.
Great. Thanks so much, y'all. And I'd like to circle back around maybe in 6 to 9 months to see where we are in regards to more wind development in the southeast, if that's okay.
That sounds great.
Definitely.
Great. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you very much, Beth.
Bye.
AWEA, which is the American Wind Energy Association, was in Atlanta, gosh, could it be 3 years ago? At least 2 years ago for their national conference, and they invited me to come and cover it. And it was, I said, you know, why are you in Atlanta? This is the southeast, relatively considered not a wind-friendly area. And they're like, we know the development is coming. And so it's exciting to hear Allie and Simon talk about the progress, although it may not sound a lot like a lot, but it actually is pretty substantial progress towards that reality. So we really appreciate their expertise. And cleanenergy.org is a great resource. They've got lots of blogs and lots of experts talking about wind. So if you get a chance, you can hop over there. We will see you next week. Same bat channel, same bat time for Speaking of Green. And don't forget, the Southeast Green is online to serve you 24/7 with all your sustainable business and environmental policy news in the Southeast. Y'all have a great green groovy week. We're signing out with Jeff Hicks and the Heretics. Life's a Peach.